wrestling soup is intended for mature audience. We like to use non-words.
Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone.
Wrestling soup. I'm Anthony Missionary Thomas. He is Kevin Castle. What's going on, Duder?
Hey, man, what's up?
Stuffing things. Yeah, man.
Puffing stuff.
Huff and puff and stuff. Well, where did that come from? That was a 60s thing, wasn't it? The puffing stuff?
H.R. Puffin' Stuff, oh, late 60s. Yeah. Saturday morning cartoons. I think it was late 60s, early 70s. So I was around back then. I just can't remember when it was on. I was a little kid. I was born in 68, so I think it was early 70s.
Do you still miss those old school cartoons like the Clutch Cargos and the Johnny Quests and shit like that?
When I was around, there was stuff called Captain Cool and the Kongs, and there was Bigfoot and Wild Boy, which I love because I was fascinated with Bigfoot. There was Wonder Bug, and you can find it like 70s things. There's a whole thing on 70s cartoons. So it was live shows like with real people and stuff, and they would then throw it to a cartoon, and you watch the Pink Panther, or you watch some sort of cartoon, but there was live people doing skits and stuff, almost like a Saturday Night Live for kids. That's what it was in the 70s.
Okay, cool. I didn't even know that shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, whenever I think of 70s, you always think, like, the basics, like Looney Tunes was around, Popeye, Tom and Jerry, maybe some Rocky and Bullwinkle, although I think that was even earlier than that.
Yeah, no, it was, Saturday morning cartoons was just a big deal, I would say, up until the mid-80s or maybe late 80s. I don't remember the 90s. I think the 90s, that bloom came off the rose, I always like to say, on the old days. But the 70s and 80s, it was, you were up early in the morning and watching TV, and your parents would sleep in because they know you were downstairs glued to the TV to 12 noon. No. You know, that was the whole thing. I mean, yeah, Saturday morning, I kind of wish that, I mean, today it's such a just different time. I can't envision that. I'm sure there's young kids up, but they're probably watching Blu-rays or the mom puts on something.
Yeah,
or their
there
favorite
is no
thing.
Saturday morning anymore because they've got cartoons 24 hours a day on so many different channels. You know, you got.
The that's why. Yeah. So the days of turning on AB. So which channel you want? Channel 4, you know, channel 4 and you just. Mom's going back to bed. It's 7 o'clock. She gets up at 11. You're still in front of the TV. It's not over yet till 12 noon. And that was the day to just keep the kids in front of the TV, give them breakfast, and mom and dad go back to bed. That was my parents' routine pretty much throughout the 70s.
Yeah, that was pretty much my routine throughout the 80s, even as a kid. Like 80s was Saturday morning cartoons, and you had everything on, like you said, different channels. And each channel would have like a couple of shows you wanted to watch, and then you had switch over to the other channel to watch that. It was interesting. It was almost like the Monday Night Wars, except on Saturday, except with cartoons and toys.
Yeah, it was. Because they had different stuff. Channel 2, Channel 4. Yeah, it was frustrating for a kid because there was no VCRs then in the 70s. Not till the early 80s does that really come into play, even though the VCR was created in the late 70s. But no family had it. It was such a luxury to have, along with having cable. So you had a friend who had... So you had to channel 4, channel 7, you know, channel 5 or channel 2. And as a kid, you'd be totally frustrated. Then you keep, and you had to, by the way, no remote control, get up and change the channel on the television. So I remember all that.
The knob. Yeah, you had to
get your little pajama ass up and stand near the TV and go, commercial, channel 7.
Were you a commercial flipper too?
Yeah, I was absolutely a commercial flipper. I mean, even in those days, again, we would look at the TV guide was big, even to little kids. We'd read the TV guide, it would come in the mail.
Right.
And my father ordered the TV guide. We get the TV guide and look, you know, what's on channel 4, but we want to watch this and that. And then we'll just go to the commercial and we can watch both. And we would, wonder when the rerun was going to be on so we could watch the full episode. There was no, you missed something, you missed it. Like,
right.
We talked the Jump the Shark episode. Everybody was here's Jump the Shark, which was made famous by Happy Days, where Fonzie jumped the shark. I believe it was 1977 or 78.
Yeah.
And you missed that episode at school the next day. You're like, wow, when are they going to? You had to wait till they reran it for the summer. There was no recording. I recorded it for you.
And your parents wouldn't record it for you either. So if you wanted to watch something, you had to ask your parents. Be like, I'm not wasting a Betamax tape on recording the fucking Smurfs, Anthony.
It was true. Yeah, no, that was another thing. Yeah, I mean, to go to school and know you missed a TV show right. that everybody watched. Did you see Fonzie jump the garbage cans last night, like Evel Knievel? No, I missed. I was sick. I fell asleep. I can't believe it. Like, you would be so frustrated like a 9-year-old that you missed the Evel Knievel jump in the 70s. I was like, fuck.
And wrestling was the same way, too, man. I mean, even though it was like Saturday morning.
Missed it on TV. Mm-hmm.
Superstars and stuff like that. You were expected to watch. Every Tuesday, we go into class and we talk about prime time every Monday night. You know, how much you saw and everything else like that. Oh, The Undertaker had an appearance at the funeral parlor. You know, like.
Yeah, you missed it. And maybe they would show the replay the next week. Like, you know, last week, you know, Ted DiBiase offered The Undertaker a bunch of money. And here's the playback. But it's not the whole clip. But,
they would usually show it on Superstars. So you'd watch the supplemental shows.
Wrestling Challenge was the other one.
And then you'd actually get matches that they had internationally too, because this was back when they had like Titan tapes and stuff like that, where you could only see, you know, the WWE Europe or WWF European tour on beta or VHS. Like they weren't showing it on pay-per-view. There was no, God, what was it called back then? Like not on demand. It was called something else, but back then, that was the only way you could watch like WrestleMania or, you know, Survivor Series if it wasn't on regular television. You know, the only way you could watch was this cable loop. So a lot of WWF's matches and shows that took place overseas, you'd only get to see a little bit of it when they ran Superstars or they ran Wrestling Challenge. You'd see like a match of like Bulldog versus Shawn Michaels and, you know, fucking somewhere in London or something like that.
A lot of times in Canada, they would show some Canadian thing.
Coliseum Home Video. Thank you, Anna.
Coliseum Home Video. You'd rent those in the 80s from the video stores, you know, the mom and pop video stores that were there. Me and my brother John rented all of them on a regular basis. When WrestleMania first came out, I can't even tell you how many times we rented the original WrestleMania.
No shit.
With that cartoon picture, if anybody remembers the old VCR box, the cartoon picture of Hogan and Mr. T overseeing the New York skyline.
Yeah.
You know, and then me and my brother trying to figure out, should we buy it? Should we buy it? How much is it? $110. I was like, but back then to us, that was a lot of money. I mean, you know, he was.
That's a lot of money now, too. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So I was 15. He was 12 or 13. But we just continuously rented. I come home, like, what are you watching? Mania 1. And then Mania 2 came out. But then they had all the individuals. Best of Andre the Giant.
Right.
And meanwhile, it was not really the best of Andre the Giant. It was him versus Ken Patera, him versus a couple of him versus Johnny Rods at the Garden. It wasn't really a best of. It was just basically something they slopped together to put in video stores.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, even the video games back then were pretty wild, too. I'm trying to remember one of the first video games I played. For WWF. I mean, there was WrestleMania, the video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System, which was awful. But there was also one, I think, made by Acclaim for the computer. WrestleFest. There we go. Nick knows what I'm talking
about. WrestleFest. Wow.
Yeah, man. There was a lot of real good games back then, and they were absolutely horrible at the same time, you know, because looking back on it, it's like they don't hold up well. But at the time, they were so fucking amazing, you know. I don't know. It was a good time to be a kid back in the 80s and 90s.
Now, Mish, I know you're a big Captain America guy. You're into comics and stuff like that. Sure. When you're a young guy, are you thinking to yourself, were you mostly like a normal kid, live for today, not really thinking about this stuff? All the stuff that you have, how much were you able to save? Did you save? Do you actually have a lot of stuff from childhood? Not withstanding comics, but videos or video games that you thought, no, this will be around for a long time, or did you let things just go by the wayside and just trashed a lot of stuff over the year, like from your younger years, knowing that, you know, technology in the future would probably wipe it out, whether it was VHS tapes, or did you say, I have all my VHS tapes in boxes in storage. I didn't throw any of my VCR tapes out going back to the early 80s. I still have them all. I don't have a VCR anymore, but do you have all that stuff? Like some of my cousins saved their original Atari games from 82, still have them. Like, it's insane. Like, I would never have I just would figure things, you make moves, you're a young man, you're moving out, get your own apartment. Leave this at mom's house. Throw it out, mom. So much shit. I'd be rolling in dough now had I kept all that shit.
When my mother was a neat freak, So she threw everything out. If it was older than a year, it was probably thrown in the garbage. Wow. Whether it was video games or tapes or clothes or comics, it doesn't matter. If it was old enough, I'd say about a year or two, even my toys. Even if the toys were like a couple of years old, she would take them and throw them out. She was, I don't want to say she was adamant against like, you know, dirty houses and stuff like that, but she was kind of raised up the old way, European and stuff like that. And obviously underneath my grandfather, I think a lot of that was you have to throw the toys away in order to get the child to grow. So all my car, the only thing I saved was football cards. I still have those. And I still have about 5 Nintendo games from way back when. And that's really the only thing that got saved over the years.
Did you have Matchbox cars or garbage, anything like that? Or Transformers. Same with me. I mean,
garbage. Dude,
I had, my God. I had like the, in the late 70s, I had the Smokey and the Bandit Trans Am from Matchbox.
I had the Knight Rider series, dude. I fucking loved all that shit. Knight Rider.
Oh, me too. Man.
Right into the garbage. I had all the He-Man. I had the Transformers. I don't know if you remember Mask at all with the transforming. Yep. Garbage. Gosh, all into the fucking garbage.
That's what Sean's saying. That's money. Now, there's so much. See, my brother Mike, John did to a degree, but not to the degree that my brother Mike, who some of you have heard, he's come on with you a couple of times in the past.
Yeah.
He does the horror podcast. Mike saved all that stuff.
Oh,
toys,
man.
In the box. Even in the 80s, we would be like, why don't you take him out of the box? No, I put him on the shelf. And that's him at like 10 or 11. And he had, I don't know if he had the vision. I mean, I guess, like I said, he just cut from a different cloth where he saved everything, you know, and he still has stuff to this day that is 35 years old. I don't barely have anything like that besides wrestling magazines and VHS tapes. Unfortunately, like everything else that I have,
it's funny because I talk with like the comic book crusaders, you know, shout out to Rob. But the only thing I've started collecting from my past are the little muscle wrestling figures. They were little pink figures that came in like a see-through trash can, or they came in like a package of four. And there was two versions. There was the American Mattel version, or I forgot if it's Mattel, it might be somebody else. And then there was the Bandai Japanese version. And so I've now collected from the past all of them except for four figures, which ends up being like about 1,000 figures total. And they're just these little, and you have to scrimp and claw and fucking literally search online on the dark web just to find a fucking figure. Oh, it's insane. The level of this shit. But yeah, I'm close to a complete collection of the originals, and I'm only four off, and I'm fucking pretty proud of that. But yeah, dude, my mom was, and I love her to death. I don't mean like, this fucking bitch. I don't mean it like that at all. That's just the way she was. And I mean, like I said, looking back in hindsight, yeah, she was a neat freak. And I was a kid. I didn't keep my room the cleanest, you know, like what kid really did. Yeah. But, you know, I think the reason that she threw all the toys away and stuff like that was she felt that this is the way to get you to outgrow things, you know, because.
I guess so. I mean, no one, I guess, really, you know, living in the moment, and even some of our parents would do that too. No one ever thought like this could be valuable in the future.
Right.
I never.
Well, that's why I think they left me with my football cards and my baseball cards. My baseball cards eventually disappeared, but I think that's why I had my comics and my football cards, because they did believe that maybe one day that'll be worth a few shekels. You know,
baseball card stuff. I lost that along the way, all that kind of stuff. Autographs or autographed baseballs I had lost over the years. I
mean, your parents threw that out?
No, I lost it. I don't know what I did with it.
I got it.
Is an autographed ball from Mike Piazza? No one's going to want this. <It's> gonna...
You're listening to Wrestling Soup.
Cards are hot right now.
Are they? Are they coming back up in value?
Are cards coming back up in value? Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, dude, I have not paid attention in fucking years.
I used to love baseball cards. For a brief minute, I was collecting football cards in the early 80s when the New York Sack Exchange, the Jets, Mark Gastineau, that whole fucking defensive line, because they were like a big celebrity. Jets had like celebrities on the team. Abdul Salam, Marty Lyons, Joe Klecko. If anybody in the chat remembers the guys like Joe Klecko and Marty Lyons and Abdul Salam, 81, 82, 83.
Unbelievable, man. I still have those WWF cards kicking around. I still have a few of those. I have Davey Boy Smith, Hulk Hogan, and I think Macho Man.
Nice.
But I also have, do you remember Garbage Pail Kids?
Of course, yeah. My cousins Gina and Jennifer used to collect those.
Dude, they're still in circulation. They've got new versions of them. Still, it's like fucking what, 30 years later? Maybe longer than that. It has to be closer, like 45.
I remember when they made that movie. That was such a hideous. That was a harsh looking movie.
Oh, that was one of the worst. Yeah.
That's frightening. The live human size.
Garbage
creatures that they look.
Right.
Anybody see it? There it is. Look at that. That is horrifying. That is horrifying.
No CGI, dude. This is pre CGI. This is all fucking puppeteering.
Yes. Matter of fact, go see it. It could be turn out to be one of your guilty pleasure. To watch the Garbage Pail Kids.
You guys haven't seen that? That movie is atrocious, and it's like a shock value movie on purpose. Like they're purposely
feel dirty watching it. Literally.
Yeah, it is fun as shit, though. Nick is right. It's total garbage, but it's like they're not lying to you when they made it. like you're not going to enjoy this movie unless you enjoy car accidents. Here you go.
Yeah, and don't look for any top marquee names of anybody starring in the movie. You know, Harrison Ford passed on that one.
Yeah. He was doing a little film called Star Wars.
Robert Redford refused to make an appearance.
Yeah, dude. That was
what year? Who knows what year was the Garbage
Pail? That had to have been 84, 85, right?
No. I think it was 89. What year was that?
Oh, was it really that late?
Garbage Pail Kid movie. What year was it? 88, 89, 90? 86?
Oh, no.
It's 86. Yeah, someone look it up and get a read on that.
1987.
Was it 87? Yep. Yeah. And Howard the Duck was the year before.
Right.
I mean, look at that. That's horrifying. Look at that picture Anna put up.
Yeah. Well, and those were all characters based on the cards, too. Like, I just picked up a couple of cards, went to an antique shop the other day, and apparently some dude has been saving all his Garbage Pail Kids forever, and he was selling them at $1 a piece. So I got one named after my brother, and I got Bony Tony, which is a picture of the Garbage Pail Kid unzipping his flesh, it's a skeleton with like bugs crawling out the eyes and shit. It's great.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, 87 was a weird year for me. I mean, 87, you had The Princess Bride, you also had Fatal Attraction.
Yep.
You had top notch movies. That is, well, you had Wall Street, you know, Greed Is Good, Gordon Gekko, but the Garbage Kids was just that was just a train wreck. And but yeah, that was really, like, I think panned across the universe as just one of the worst movies of all time.
Yeah, it was fucking great.
There's the old school kids and stuff. Yeah, I remember my cousins, Gene. And
did you ever collect the wacky cards, like Mountain Spew?
Wacky packages.
And, yeah.
Yes, wacky with Blunderbread. Blunderbread.
Yeah, instead of Wonderbread. Like yeah.
Wacky packages, and they would have Mr. Clean as Mr. Clean, K-L-E-E-N.
Right.
Wacky packages was big. In the late 70s, at school, we would trade for them and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys, that's so old school. Anybody here in the chat can find the wacky packages like promo. That shit was old school. That's 10 years predates Garbage Pail Kids. Wacky,
you know, packages. What else was really big, too? I mean, especially in the 80s. I don't think so much in the 70s, but for every movie that came out, they started coming out with trading cards. So you have Ghostbusters come out. There was Ghostbuster trading cards.
Carolyn Chicky has a whole bunch of those.
Yeah, Batman would come out with fucking Michael Keaton, and then you'd had Batman cards. Like, all the big movies that came out came with trading cards. That was something really cool. Yeah, Beetlejuice. Yeah. Star Wars had more than a few, you know, even back in the day. Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had them. Yep.
All those movies have Back to the Future has cards. They all, you're right. They all have cards. I mean, there's some people I think who are just like my podcast partner, Carolyn, is a big collector of movie memorabilia from the 80s.
Right.
So she would, I'd like this conversation, she would love. I got to tell her to listen to this episode specifically. Because, yeah, I mean, we talked about all that stuff. I mean, even every time you bring up something, I'm like, oh, I didn't know you have that too. It's like, my God, it's like, it's like, why don't you have it? Didn't you have it as a kid? You lived through that generation. I'm a retro collector. She was like not even born during some of these things. And I'm like, and what I'm telling you is they just got thrown out by the wayside. She's like, I can't believe you don't have any of them. Back then, you did not think about that kind of stuff. Like I said, my brother Mike did at 10, but at 15, I'm like, I need room on my shelf for something else. This goes in the garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And today it'd probably be worth, I'd be swimming in money. And definitely would have helped out during COVID.
Or at least swimming in fucking nerd points. Jesus.
Nerd points. You know.
Yeah.
I would have had big nerd points and stuff. But yeah, if I could do it all over again, I probably would have. I probably still would have opened up the boxes. I would have had kind of half-ass collectibles. They would have been pristine, mint condition. But they would have still been here, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
And now, Dr. Brian Wright reads shit takes from wrestling fans on social media.
Here's another one. Trey Flowers says, just a reminder that anyone from Wrestling Soup are and will be biased to shit on AEW as they falsely equate it to TNA.
Catch more shit takes by Brian Wright on WrestlingSoup.com.
This has been Busing. Listen to me, the greatest podcast on the internet.
Money in the Bank this weekend, Saturday, in Paradise, Nevada, which is right outside of Vegas for people that didn't know, at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, which was the smaller venue, as many AEW fans pointed out. We've got Bianca Belair versus Carmella singles match for the Raw Women's Championship.
Oh, Bianca Belair all the way. Carmella has no chance in hell.
Man, did you see that promo that they cut on Monday?
Yes.
How bad did you feel afterwards?
It was horrible. I commented even as live. I was just like, it's just awful. I mean, it's almost embarrassing. It's hard to believe. You know, you give NXT a pass because of their experience. They're coming up. They're learning. And the people on the main roster are worse than the NXT. I actually enjoy NXT promos. I cringe less than what I see on Monday Night Raw. I don't get it. And I can't even blame creative. It's like the wrestlers don't even know how to act anymore.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
They don't even know how to act anymore.
Yeah. The promo that Bianca had and Carmella was just real, man. This was bottom of the barrel promo work. Like this is something you'd expect from a high school play. You know, that's the level of.
Yeah, and I think, you know, listen, you know, Bianca Belair is a great athlete and stuff, and everyone gets her fan base gets very triggered when you criticize her.
Sure.
Even in the pathetic reach attempt, crying racism when you say something about her in a negative way. But the funny thing is I know and hear that she is a very nice person in real life. So the smiley thing is her real thing.
Yeah.
She's not an attitude-y girl like Sasha Banks or whatever. This is her. But for some reason, it doesn't come off well, her being herself is what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know. Like, she maybe is a good actress because she played a great heel in NXT. Me and you have talked about that before, whipping people with the hair and being brutal. She came off good, and it's funny. They always say you get over the best when it's your real life personality with the volume turned up.
Right.
But I Bianca Belair's nice girl routine, which is legitimate because she is, just isn't coming off authentic. It's kind of weird. You know what I mean?
It's because she doesn't know how to talk like a nice girl. Like, she's a nice girl in real life, but it's hard for her to talk trash while trying to be herself. Cause she's probably the kind of person in real life that doesn't even talk trash. Do you know what I mean? As a heel, she's probably able to step outside of herself and just be a completely different personality and have no tether because of that. But because she's a babyface, because she's supposed to be a fan favorite, it's almost weird for her to be this all-inclusive babyface, but at the same time trying to drag down Carmella, or at least not know how to. And Carmella is, I would think that's an easy get. Like, isn't it, doesn't anybody think it's easier to make fun of a Carmella than it would be even to make fun of an Asuka? Because there's so many things you can point out about Carmella, whether it's the way she looks, whether it's the surgery, whether it's the fact that she's a natural born loser, right. You know, whether it's her relationship with Corey, like there's so many ways you can poke that fucking bear. And it's just wild to me that Bianca almost stops herself from taking those because those are low blows, even though the fans would totally eat it up. Dude, if Bianca started lacing into Carmella about her relationship with Corey, you'd have Corey going, "Oh, I can't believe you're going to say that." And the fans would have probably eaten that right up. Loved it. You know, and I'm not saying that the fans didn't like Bianca. They absolutely do. It's just babyface time needs to either get adjusted or got to go. Bianca is a solid fucking athlete. She's a solid wrestler. She's a good champion, but she just doesn't have it as far as, you know, inspiring a lot of people to want to fucking pay.
Yeah. And just her comebacks. And I don't know if the WWE guys in the back go, just give a little attitude. She's like, "Girl, please." And right. I'm like, that's your reaction to getting jumped. Like, it's just like, yeah. You know, Carmella jumps her and then Carmella does that stupid Mella's money thing. It's like, you're clearly not money. Like, you know, it's such a dumb catchphrase for someone who's not money whatsoever.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking Carmelo Hayes over in NXT needs to use that expression because he's money. That Mello was money.
Carmelo is money.
Yeah, Carmelo is money. That kid is money. Carmella is not money. I hope they let him get her catchphrase. But yeah, just Bianca Belair just like, "Girl, you better," and I'm like, it sounds so hokey and it's just so stupid.
Yeah, it's 90s.
And Bianca Towers, Bianca's so much bigger than her. And it just is just like, Mella's not a threat. I get it. You have to have a tweener opponent while you're in between big feuds. You gotta feed the system. Just like when Bob Holly was no threat to Brock Lesnar.
You know who she sounds like, dude? She sounds like Damon Wayans from Mad TV when he would sit in the chair and go, "Three snaps up."
Oh yeah! Oh, the movie review guys. Look at the clap she's doing. Yeah, that's what he did. If actually someone found the thing, maybe she's even taking a cue from that. I don't know.
That's a bad cue. Oh, that was In Living Color. Sorry,
Living Color. Yeah, some
Mad TV. They were both on at the same time. To be fair, they were both great.
Yeah, Living Color. But yeah, because she's this diesel up. I mean, you know. Powerful girl, track star, weightlifter, and just, I don't know, that just seems to me to be, I could see Sasha Banks doing the girl, bye, please thing and stuff. It's just not Bianca Belair. She doesn't need to do that.
Right.
You know, yeah, there it is, the two steps.
That's fucking awesome. Thank you, Filthy.
Oh my, yeah, that's well over 30, 35 years old.
God, that dates us.
So some of the younger folks, like, I have no idea who that is. But yeah, I don't know. And I'm sure that does, you know, oh, that's Bruce Pritchard and Vince. That's their depiction of a black girl with attitude.
It doesn't have to be negative the time.
I don't know what it is. Listen, sometimes it is the I've learned from, you know, being friends with a former WWE guy on the roster, that a lot of times it is actually the wrestler who brings these ideas, and it's not always creative. When it works out, you're a hero. And when it doesn't work out, look and point and blame somebody else.
Right.
So I don't know if Bianca's like, you know, I'm going to do the finger snap and I'm going to be like, "Girl," like, you know, because I think people relate to that. Maybe she brought it up. I don't know. I just can't picture Vince saying, "I want you to do the girl snap thing." Like, you know, I don't know if Vince is that much of a micromanager, but it just doesn't, I don't know.
Thank you, Chris Adams. Really, it was called Men on Film.
Men on Films. Thank you. Men on Films. But anyway, yeah, Bianca all day long. Carmella has no chance.
Right. No. We'll go on to Ronda Rousey versus Natalya singles match for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
Another feeder, tweener opponent. Just give, you know, have it Natty coming out on, what was it, SmackDown the other night with the baby carriage and dress. Like, Natty doesn't have it in her to do stuff like that. She just doesn't have it as far as can be a different character or grab the audience with a captivating promo. Natty is just cringe to me. I just, you know, I never got Natty's appeal. I never will. She's not one of the best in the world. Her father wasn't one of the best in the world either. Very overrated. Brett is, you know, yeah. Brett's a star of that family. But listen, if you can, you can still get a rub with that last name, great. But even the best there is, best there was thing that she says, I'm just like, this is just annoying to me. And I get it. That's
who she is. She
doesn't make a good heel, though. I mean, she's irritating, but that, and irritating is not necessarily a heel. I know a lot of nice girls were very irritating, and they're sweethearts. They're just overbearing. Right. But she's not a natural heel. I think her coming out, like that kind of skit that she did with the baby and pretend to be Ronda with her baby, I could picture Sasha Banks doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Or a girl like, you know, could really pull that off. Natty is just going to be fed to her. And it's going to be quick and done, 3-minute match, and Ronda's going to make a tap out.
It was funny. I was actually watching both of these girls because they're showing the actual clip up there with Shayna stepping in against Ronda, saying, I can't step in the middle of this, you know, which both Shayna and Natty were at Dr. Bo. I don't know if you ever watched those, but Dr. Bo is this chiropractor who pulls out like fucking sledgehammers and big spikes and pretty much just readjusts people's body.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He did. I saw him working on Kevin Nash one time.
Yeah, well, he did one just recently, like literally the other day with Shayna and Natty both came in because they travel together. Because, of course, yeah, because of course they do. And yeah, and they were there. He was there working on them and stuff like that. But, I mean, in the real world where Shayna was talking, Shayna is fucking wonderful talking about her background and in wrestling and professional wrestling and stuff like that. So her entire background, even in MMA, came from Catch Can wrestling. And I guess that's what she's always been a fan of, was Catch Can wrestling. That's how she eventually got into pro wrestling.
Right.
Even her Mount Rushmore top five was like the bloody Manami Toyota, you know, and a bunch of other people. So I was kind of impressed by Shane and stuff. And Natty, you know, Natty's such a mom. Like, to the point where even Shayna is saying that, and I forgot who the other girl, I think Gonzalez was with them from NXT, but, like, she's just such the mom part. Like, for her status outside of WWE is the way that fans and wrestlers look at her, you're right, it's almost difficult to buy her as a heel because her name and her personality go so much further than whatever character they're putting her into. So it's not that I don't want to see Natty versus Ronda. Of course I do. And it'll be a good match, you know. But as far as believing in Natty.
They match up not bad. I mean, they're friends too, so they probably rehearsed it. I'm sure they'll be on point.
Oh, yeah.
Let's put it this way. It'll be a better match than Bianca versus Carmella.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it will be. I mean, Ronda and Natty are clearly, you know, miles ahead of anything Carmella can do, so. The Usos, Jimmy and Jay versus the Street Profits tag team for the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship.
As much as both teams are great, two of the best teams in wrestling, I am tired of seeing these guys go against each other. Singles matches every week, they're pushing and shoving each other at ringside. I'm tired of this feud. Let's just end this already. And I think the bloom is off the rose with the Usos being so dominant. I'm going to give it to the Street Profits. Yeah, I think it's starting to wane. It is. It's starting to wane. The blood in the family. What's the name of I can't remember the name of Roman Reigns' faction. What the hell's the name of the faction?
The bloodline.
The blood in the family. The bloodline, it's starting to, you know, Reigns needs to be dominant. The Usos don't. This way they can have the discourse. You lost the titles and Reigns can give them a dressing down on TV. Keep it interesting in the bloodline. I'm going to give it to the Street Profits. I think they're going to take it.
I kind of agree with you. I think the Street Profits are going to win, but I don't necessarily believe that it's the Usos' fault. I think, Maurice said it's a lack of teams. Yeah, New Day isn't really
definitely
prominent.
Yeah, lack of teams.
You know, there really isn't anybody else that can run the division. I argued with Joey, or I don't want to say argued, but we kind of came to the conclusion yesterday because there was a lot of people that were saying that FTR is the greatest tag team in wrestling today. And I still argue the Usos. And I understand that the gimmick is kind of stale, and it is. And they've been doing the same matches and same feuds, and they have. But I don't look at the Usos as being the problem. I think if you took the Usos, and we'll just play fantasy for a minute, if you took the Usos and put them in AEW, they would still have amazing fucking matches no matter who the team is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Moving on, we go to Theory versus Bobby Lashley singles match for the WWE United States Championship.
I like this match. It could be either one here. I don't know. Theory's hot. He's on a roll. He's the future of this company. Lashley is 45 years old. He's a big baby face, but the future is he's twice the age of Theory. Think about that, guys. Yeah. He's twice the age of Theory.
He don't look it, though. Let's be honest.
You don't know. He doesn't look it. God bless anybody who can look at 45, look like that. But it just, you derail Theory and say, well, it's Bobby Lashley. He's beaten the best. It doesn't hurt Theory losing to a juggernaut like Bobby Lashley. It doesn't hurt, but there's certain guys you want to keep Teflon. You don't want to, just like they were keeping Cody Rhodes up until his injury.
Right.
I think Theory is falls into that very special little category of such an important part of the future that we are going to be super, super careful with this guy. So some way, shape, or form, Theory retains.
You think they're going to try and keep Theory strong until Cody comes back?
I think so. And I don't know. I thought, I didn't get the comment on it because obviously I don't do a Monday show anymore. With the interaction with John Cena in the back, which I thought he would jump Cena during his speech. I mean, I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit too. I'm getting ahead. But what I was confused about was that was the interaction in the back in that little segment, and then nothing thereafter. No jumping John in the ring. Even when John was coming around, took his shirt off and was slapping hands with everybody, I'm like, watch, there he's going to jump him. No, never happened. So I don't know if they're saving it or whatever, or like, no, maybe the creative's thinking, Lashley's a top guy, let him focus. He can't be feuding with John Cena and Lashley at the same time. Let's not screw it up. John will be back and do another segment, and then Theory can jump him on another Raw or something. Yeah. So maybe that's what they're waiting for, because I do believe it's going to be Cena and Theory at a WrestleMania or something.
Yeah, you know? That seems like that's what they're trying to push to. I don't know if they'd actually go to WrestleMania with that. I would, honestly, personally, I'd rather see...
Before, what am I talking about? Like, one of the other big pay-per-views.
Yeah, like a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, I mean, I'd like to see Theory versus Cody at a Mania. I mean, if you're going to build up, the future and the present, like, that would be a hell of a match to have, if they can swing that.
It would be.
Yeah. Next match on the card, we got Lacey Evans, Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Asuka. I don't know why I called her Gonzalez earlier. My bad. Asuka, Shotzi, and Becky Lynch, Money in the Bank ladder match for a women's championship match contract.
I like Raquel a lot. I feel bad that a lot of podcasters make fun of her because she's so way too babyface now, and her whole original gimmick was the Latina China
as a
heel. And I guess Vince just says, this is a pretty girl. We got to make her like a big babyface. I like Raquel a lot. Follow her on Instagram. I'm just a big fan of hers. And I look at for some reason, people are going to say Becky Lynch. I'm going to go with an oddball here. Lacey Evans.
Attaboy. Lacey
Evans, my man. Oh, you're on board with me?
Yeah. I'm totally on board with Lacey Evans.
Lacey Evans wins it. I think that there's a method to the madness of all the back and forth with Lacey Evans, that people are saying, oh, they lost faith in her. They're bouncing around. She's a babyface.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
But they're going to reward. There's a method to that madness of the Lacey Evans confusion and bouncing back from show to show, heel to babyface heel. In the end, they want her to be a top girl.
Right.
And she's going to, I believe she will win Money in the Bank.
The only caveat I see to that is Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan has had the rocket ship strapped to her ass for a while now. And anything that they can do to build her up as a legitimate talent seems like it's the direction that they want to go. Now, the only reason I would say Lacey Evans is because, like you said, they did a lot for Lacey Evans to build her up. She's come back. She's got a fucking amazing pedigree before she's even a wrestler. And now you want to reestablish her as somebody big in the company. What better way to do that than giving her a Money in the Bank contract? But Liv is an experiment that WWE doesn't want to give up on. And I'm almost worried that they're just going to give her the briefcase in order to try and push the experiment forward. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, I do. I mean, I think that there was even something to her beating Alexa Bliss so decisively And, you know, and I heard JD talk about it on his show, and I had mentioned it on Twitter. I saw it was sometimes like we're thinking the same thing. It's amazing that he just said, but Alexa Bliss in that match looked like she just doesn't care anymore, or was given word from the back that she's not going to wear any titles anytime soon. So just put Liv over,
right,
and put her over like a dead fish. Well, I mean, just that match was not that match. Really, the size of the girls, the look, the wrestling experience. Yeah. That's a good matchup. And I get, and once again, before anybody tells me, I get that they're under the regime of in the back 3 minutes, girls, no longer just give us 3 minutes. I get it. It's not up to them to do a 3 minute match. They're told to do that. But Alexa Bliss looks so disengaged in that match. Yeah. And just almost like knowing, well, Liv's getting the push. I'll just put her over. I'll sell the doll. My time is not now. It's her time. So maybe it is Liv's time. So,
well, even with that Liv promo, I don't
think you can go wrong. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. You just brought it up, though. Even with that Liv promo, there was a lot of people believing that there was an underlying message behind the words that she chose with Alexa Bliss saying, you know, your time is up. My time is now. Do you think that was kind of a nod to the Super Cena push from back in the day that Liv might be on the way to pretty much going through an undefeated streak for a while? Do you think there's any preface to those kind of rumors or no?
See, Andy's saying her first loss since last year. Alexa and other people were saying to me, and I saw the JD too, they were coming saying she only lost one match. It's about how she lost the one match and the disengaged she looked. It almost, if you look at her coming to the ring and leaving the ring, it looks like they told in the back, look, it's Liv's time. Put her over.
Good. But she was doing like, that with Sonya. Like people are short-minded. When Alexa Bliss came out there with Sonya, that match was, what, 15 seconds?
15 seconds, exactly. But, so
Alexa Bliss isn't doing anything that's special since she's come back. I don't want to sit there and say that WWE is punishing her or anything like that, because I don't think that that's the case. I just think that they've moved on. I think the Alexa Bliss.
They've moved on, Mish, and I think her doing that interview, what magazine was that when she got married and talked about, you know, she got the cover, was it People or Entertainment Weekly, whatever. And they did do a little interview, and she was saying how she was kind of, you know, with the product lately and stuff. Again, she kind of poo-pooed on the product interviewed her. And they're like, okay, you know, like, you know what, go on tour with your husband or whatever. We got Liv Morgan. We got another cute little blonde here. I think WWE does do stuff like that to keep it, you know, competitive, you know, like what they used to do between Warrior and Hogan. Like, hey, we don't got A, we got B, and we're happy with B. Similar, you know, big diesel up cartoon character looking guy. They play it again. Look at these two in the ring. It's like, now, and it's funny because Liv is younger than Alexa, and Alexa's pretty young. She's only 30. Liv is, what, 28 or 29? So it's like, and the fans are really behind Liv right now, and Alexa's just selling dolls right now. I mean, that doll has no bearing on her character at all. It's like she's just coming out with that.
Yeah.
To just like, she's even the way she's carrying it. It's like, oh, I forgot the doll. Give me the doll.
Right.
You know, she looks very disengaged. And I don't think me or any other podcasts are reading too much into it. I think we're reading it correctly. I think Alexa doesn't have a poker face. I think you can kind of tell when she's annoyed.
Yeah.
And she doesn't sell very well. But listen, bottom line is, because we're going on and on about this, you can't go wrong if you go with Liv or Lacey. L&L.
Right.
Go with one or the other, and you won't go wrong here.
And much love to Shotzi, but she ain't going to win it, guys. Come on.
Love Shotzi, but I just maybe her time is down the road.
Wrestling Soup will be right back.
Don't boo me. You should be booing yourself.
Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Omos, Sami Zayn, Riddle, and To Be Decided for the Money in the Bank ladder match for the World Championship match contract. Firstly, who do you expect the To Be Decided is?
I don't really know. I'm really not sure. The chat room maybe can help me out, and they're like, who do you guys think it is? I really don't know. I'm really putting my money on Riddle. Because Riddle is just hot right now, and he lost, and then he wins, then the big win, and then another big loss. But he's hot, and the crowd loves him right now, so I wouldn't be surprised for Riddle, because Randy Orton's gone for the rest of the year. He's not coming back.
No, they even said that 2023 is probably when he's going to come back.
And also, Mish, can you envision a scenario where Riddle actually wins one of Roman Reigns' titles? It goes into the Royal Rumble. Randy comes back, does a congratulatory thing. Look what you accomplished, you know, while I was gone. I'm so proud of you. And then a vicious turn, and it's a title match between Randy Orton and Matt Riddle for one of the belts at WrestleMania. Can you envision that?
That would be a lot of fun, and that would make sense, and that's a good way to put them together. They don't even have to do it as enemies. Randy Orton can just flatten them and go, I want your belt. You know what I mean? I want your belt, kid. Like, it doesn't even have to be like, oh, they hate each other out of nowhere. It doesn't even have to be that. Randy Orton is singularly focused whenever it comes to the title, and he wants that. So an idea that this might be a tactic in order to set up Riddle versus Randy Orton down the road sounds fantastic. But I think the to be decided, my two guesses for to be decided are, number one, Happy Corbin.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Just because you're in Vegas, and I have
this
stupid feeling that they're going to have some kind of correlating storyline on Friday with Vegas and Corbin getting lucky again. And number two, and it's not going to be Ezekiel, Maurice. I think it'll be Elias. That's, I think it would be interesting to see Elias out there.
I didn't even think of that one. That's a good one too, man. Corbin or Elias coming out. Because I think there was something to when Cena was in the back with Ezekiel, which is a very funny promo. They were talking to each other, and he goes, what's the best advice you can give me? He goes, my best advice I can give you is just be yourself. And he looked at him and he goes, be myself. He goes, just be yourself.
Right.
And he walked away. And I'm saying there was something, because Cena even said, is Elias here? So, I mean, maybe what's his other brother that's there now? Elrod?
Yeah. Elroy from the Jetsons.
I want to trod with Elrod.
Yeah, dude.
But I mean, I'm loving this thing. And listen, it's no different than the Three Faces of Foley. And it's to say, I don't understand why people are like, oh, it's already waning. I'm like, they can milk this for another year.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's all about driving Kevin Owens crazy. But yeah, that would be to see Elias come out. I think big pop. That's a great pick. Matter of fact, now that you mention it, I'll put my name behind that one.
Really?
Corbin's a good one, but I like the Elias comes out.
Well,
Corbin
is only because they're in Vegas, and that's where Corbin started, or Happy Corbin started.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's so very good stuff. And also, you know, I'm thinking too that they can do this kind of schizophrenic thing where he's Elias, then he's Ezekiel. You know, he come almost like when Cap, remember Triple H is like, anybody want to challenge me? And then Cactus Jack comes out.
Right.
You know, like for that thing. But then the next week it was all about Dude Love. And then he'd be Mick Foley. So I think they can go that route with Ezekiel, because they're like, oh, Kev, then he's got to put on the fake beard every week. I'm like, well, so what?
And Andy's
right. It's a
costume. Right.
You know, he can put on a fake beard.
Andy's right, too, in the chat. He says Pat McAfee is supposed to be starting something with Happy Corbin
that's
soon.
That's true too. Yeah. So yeah. I'm just gonna, because it's a dark horse. You know, just thing you threw out there. I'll say Elias. Yeah.
Very nice. So that pretty much covers the Money in the Bank pay per view this Saturday. Obviously, going on to Monday Night Raw, it was the John Cena appreciation 20 year celebration. Vince McMahon was there for another spell, just to introduce him and stuff like that. And it was interesting too, because one of the big points of that night was the idea that people saw Big Show, Bryan Danielson, and
Jericho
giving some love and appreciation for Cena. I thought Cena overall for the night was fine. There was a lot of highlights over his goodwill ambassador roles that he played, more than his wrestling history, I thought. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm just saying it seemed like they were very focused on, look, he's not just John Cena, the wrestler that you all know and love, but here's all the amazing make-a-wishes and charities and everything else he's done, which is fantastic. But it was just weird that they chose to focus on that instead of his 20-year career in wrestling in WWE more so. And obviously there was a lot of good, you know, feedback and the people that he had, you know, backstage and stuff like that. I thought that it was his speech alone when he was talking about Peacemaker and everything else like that, and how everything I do, we do it together. It was a very odd speech, because it wasn't normal Cena speech. Like, Cena's speech is usually all gung-ho, let's go get him and stuff like that. So I don't know if that speech says anything about his statement to his career in WWE. Yeah. I don't know if there's anything to be said about that, Like, I honestly don't even know. I mean, because we're already expecting him that he's only working part-time. He's got other commitments. We all know that he has other commitments. And that's even besides the charitable commitments that he fucking does on the daily, apparently. It's just an interesting statement coming from him, that speech. And probably, and I don't want to, like, you know, preface this or anything else like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if most of that speech was written for him anyways. I imagine that a lot of it came from the heart, but I'm sure there was bullet points that WWE wanted him to hit on and stuff like that. I don't know. What did you feel about Cena coming back? What did you feel about the anniversary special?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I have a love hate thing with John Cena. I mean, I originally liked the prototype. I followed OVW wrestling. I did tape trades with my friend who lived in Cincinnati in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I would get OVW, literally VHS tapes, and watch them. Then I'd give them to my brother. He'd get to watch them. So when Prototype came out that night and slapped Kurt Angle, I remember I called my brother. I was like, dude, they brought up Prototype. He's like, yeah, but they're calling him, exactly the conversation went, they're calling him John Cena. Even back then, we're you know, the jaded wrestling fans that we could be.
Right.
They're calling him a regular name. He's going to go nowhere. He's coming out. He's not even in the Prototype gimmick. Like, he's going to go nowhere. And so I was like, nah, I think. And I wrote even on Twitter, we don't have to worry about John Cena anymore. And we didn't have to worry about him really from that night on, even though he did have a little stutter step.
Yeah.
He was trying to find himself. And then that year in that Halloween costume party with Stephanie McMahon, he came up towards Vanilla Ice, and then we were off to the races. It was only a couple of months of him in the doldrums in mid-card hell. And then here we go with a brand new promo after that October thing. In November, he comes out with B-Squared. And well, I would have liked to have seen a Bull Buchanan.
Yeah, I was.
Especially since his son is in. His son is Brooks and Jensen there.
Yep.
Yeah, his son's, Jensen is his son? That would have been nice to see. Granted, a lot of the new fans probably wouldn't have remembered him, but we all would have popped for that. But that's what I'm saying. They didn't really show.
Well, these anniversary shows are for us, Kev. I mean, 20 plus years ago, I don't think a lot of the fans that were in attendance were even watching wrestling 20 years ago. Not because they wouldn't have been, probably because they were too young to. I think that a lot of these anniversary shows, these, you know, the 15,000th Raw and everything else like that, those are more for us as opposed to just the run of the mill casuals. It's WWE's way of nodding to the fans that know that these people have been around for so long. And it's also a great way for WWE to pop the ratings, you know, to get more people to watch.
Absolutely. I thought they could have. I liked when he was in the back and slapping hands with everybody. I don't know if anybody notices it and go back. And I get it's probably part of her gimmick. But when John Cena walked past Becky Lynch, she was looking down and doing like a slow clap, and he completely ignored her and he hugged everybody else around him. I mean, the thing with him and Ron Killings giving him the big hug and not letting him go, I thought was cute.
Yeah.
And him going up to Shelton, who he came. Him, a lot of people, if you know the history, Shelton Benjamin was one of John Cena's roommates down in OVW, him and Charlie Haas.
They tagged together for a while, too.
They tagged together for a while because people named that class of 2002 OVW Cena, Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, and Batista. There's two guys who always get forgotten in that, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas.
Yep.
Were part of that class too, that they always get, you know, and they had a pretty good career too. But when he went up to Shelton, I'm like, oh, there's some old friends. You know, it was fun. Yeah, see Becky Lynch sitting there. There's a freeze frame of her just kind of sitting there and just looking disinterested. I get that's probably part of the character, even though everyone was out of character, slapping hands with him. Because John Cena is kind of infectious. I mean, I can kind of, unlike Hogan, I want to like John Cena. I don't want to like Hogan anymore.
John Cena is a million times better. Yeah, John Cena is a million times better as a human being.
As a human being. Yeah. Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't want to hate John Cena. It's too easy to hate John Cena. Because you saw there was a couple people like, you know, still can't wrestle, never could wrestle, five knuckles shuffle.
Well, they did it at the audience. There was a guy with a sign out there and Cena called out the dude with the sign.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not the best wrestler, but Cena made fun of the fact that he's not one of the best wrestlers.
He's self-aware.
Five-star matches with, he's self-aware. No. But he's what I love about Cena is that rarity that The Rock has, that he can, that everyone in wrestling has shown me that they can get rattled during a promo. The audience can rattle them. Lord knows Roman Reigns got rattled.
Yes.
Lord knows I've seen other people. I've seen Jericho is pretty good at keeping people at bay too. He's one of those guys too. But John Cena just does not get rattled at all. And he dealt with booing as early as 2005, he was dealing with that at the Garden.
Yeah.
You know, he was hot. 2003,
well, he used four, that.
By I five, mean, the fans turned on him by 2005.
When you're talking about 2005, I mean, even earlier than that, you know, he was using that to fuel him. So he's one of those guys, I don't think he gets rattled, but I think he relies on the positivity and the negativity in order to excel.
He feeds off it all, which is very rare.
Right.
Rock is the same way. Jericho, too, to a degree. I'll put Jericho up.
Oh, Jericho is so good with fucking people that shit on him. You know what? Jericho, I don't think, is great with praise. I think because, I mean, you listen to Jericho when he's doing, like, you know, the Sirius Satellite stuff, Sirius XM, sorry, and you've listened to his show a few times. When it comes to people praising him, it's almost kind of like, yeah, thank you. You know, like it's almost like he gets a little bashful sometimes. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. But I think with heel shit, when people are talking shit about him, he gets right into the fucking mode. He just starts going off on people. Jericho, I don't think he's good with the positivity as much as he is with the negativity.
Yeah, probably right. But I'm talking about in-ring promo where the crowd is either, you know, he's really against you and stuff. Someone had mentioned him at ECW when he took on, what was it, Rob Van Dam. You know, John knew he was going into the lines then. He was able to handle it. And again, he did not get rocked or rattled at all. He never lost a step. He doesn't stammer. He doesn't blow a move because the audience is heavily booing him and he loses his place. He's just so on. That's why I say, so it's, you should respect Cena. He's grew up a wrestling fan. You've seen his pictures of childhood wearing the armbands around like Ultimate Warrior, wrestling his brothers in the backyard.
Yeah.
He's not a gym rat. I hated is that a lot of people who didn't like him portrayed him as some dieseled up pretty boy. Came out of California bodybuilder contest like Ultimate Warrior.
But it is just, where he came from.
Got a wrestling tryout.
See, he's a
student of the game.
Right, but that's where he came from. And it's like there's a lot of people that just don't believe you ever grow from that. Like, you can't be a bodybuilder and want to be a wrestler? Oh, that's unheard of. Exactly. You know?
It was a stigma that they put on people. Right. And I think it came from, you know, the Ultimate Warrior days and the Warlord and guys like that who, you know, got a big push because they were big dieseled up guys. But everybody was a big roided up guy. I mean, would Rick Rude have gotten the push he got if he didn't have that body?
No.
I mean, come on, you know, with that mustache and that look? I mean, come on. So, again, John Cena, I think... he's a Mount Rushmore guy. It's undeniable. I even wrote on the thing, don't even make a fool out of yourself to say John Cena is not top 10 of all time. Don't even bother to debate me. And it's not because I'm the be all end all. I declared it. It's just a fact. He's top 10 of all time. Some people were saying, Kev, you can argue top five. You could argue top five, but let's just keep it top 10 because top 10 is top 10. You know what I mean?
Right. Did you get a chance to see any of the Dynamite, AEW Forbidden Door?
I saw some clips and highlights of it because I couldn't help it because everyone was on me to watch it. And I just didn't have time to watch the whole thing, but sure. I saw clips and I saw some highlights and stuff like that. Like anybody else, you know, the curiosity got the best of me.
What were your thoughts on it, man?
Not to go on and on about it because I didn't see enough of it to do that, but I'll say this, that it surprised me. Listen, they have a good thing in Chicago. Chicago is their go-to. Like, you know, if Kevin Castle wants to have a successful show, I go to Queens. That's my thing. That's where the original club was at. I do the reunion in Queens. It's going to be a line down the block. But if I go to Long Island, not so much. If I go to upstate New York where my brother lives, there'll be five people there. Listen, it depends on the demographic and basically where you're going to house an event. My thing is, if AEW is so confident, have your show in Tempe, Arizona. Have your show in South Carolina. They do in Chicago because they know they're going to have sold out in 6 minutes. Have it in North Carolina. Let me know how much it sells out. You're in one market. You're strong in two marketplaces, New York and Chicago. Great. But that's why, but WWE could sell out in bumblefuck towns when they have a big pay-per-view. They always sell out. So that's what people were mocking them about Vegas. But my whole thing about that was, hey, it's a given in Chicago. Go to Chicago and get sold. So I want to see them do something like this. I think it was successful and the crowd was so amped and into it because it was in the location it was. But I would love to have seen, had Forbidden Door been somewhere off the beaten path, then, and the crowd's electric and sold out in 6 minutes and stuff, I would say, hey, man, I give you your props. But the matches I saw and the highlights that I saw, looks like, you know, it looked like a good pay-per-view. I mean, I'm not going to shit on it because clearly majority liked it, and I think people who were hating on it actually didn't see it.
I think a lot of people even interpreted what me and Joey were saying was hate, but Joey gave it a rating of a B after everything was said and done. So it's a lot of people just wanting to throw shade our way and stuff like that. What were your thoughts on seeing Claudio?
I mean, here's the thing with that. And it's funny. I was talking to Chicky about it because, you know, she saw the clip. She goes, you know, the one thing about AEW is that, you know, they have these grandiose debuts, and unlike Cody, none of them carry momentum when they debut at AEW, this grandiose debut, and then they just go off into the abyss. Or what's that TV show, Dark?
Yeah.
And I said, no, you're not wrong, Chicky. I said, you're not wrong. She goes, and I'm not even an AEW hater or anything. I just, you know, the WWE did it right, bringing in Cody, and he stayed hot till the time he was out injured. He stayed hot for 3 months. They don't seem to do that in the other company. I'm like, no, they don't. They don't. So she says, so is it fair to say Cesaro in 2-3 weeks when they find someone else to kind of prop up will just be another guy on the card? I go, most likely, yes. So the grand debut, but you got to follow that up. You know, you got to follow that up. And will tonight AEW's on, right?
Yeah.
As we're recording this. So if you know, Claudio comes out and gets another big ovation, okay, keep the momentum going. But look at Keith Lee. He's an afterthought now. No one cares about Keith Lee. And I like Keith Lee, but come on, who cares? Who cares? Who cares about Ruby Soho now anymore? Right. Come on, nobody cares. So, I mean, you'd be silly to argue that. Will Claudio end up like that? You know, oh, he's different. This guy's one of the best wrestlers.
That's what they say about everybody that comes through that door, man.
That's what they say about everybody. I expected it to be him, by the way. And obviously he had used that name before. This is Ring of Honor fans are probably marking out. That was his name back in the old Ring of Honor days when he teamed with, what's his name? What was his old running buddy there? Cassius Ohno's original name, guys.
Chris Hero.
Chris Hero. Yeah, Chris Hero. But me and Draper got to see Chris Hero and Claudio wrestle at one of the Elks Lodge.
Kings
of Wrestling. There it is. Thank you, guys. Yeah, thank you, guys. We actually got to see them, me and Draper,
nice.
When they originally formed and were doing the independent circuit for Ring of Honor. Great addition. It's like a ball player getting a great DH, a guy who bats 320. Absolutely. It's a good addition. But just from track record, couple of weeks, Tony Khan will find something else to put his interest behind. And as far as the hug goes, because I'm sure people, you know, everyone's talking about the hug thing. That's at this point, that's Tony Khan. I expect that kind of stuff, Mesh. The hugs. I expect that. Dare I say, I would look for a rim job on live television. Tony Khan for someone. He might eat the ass of the next wrestler on live TV. I mean, that's just him. I don't even think it's a gimmick. I think Tony Khan is a touchy-feely, super emotional guy. I think that's endearing in some qualities. But Tony Khan does it to the point of annoying. And remember, we all, it's just suspicions. It's nothing.
I'm expecting there's a lot of emotions when he has to spit on it, you know, so.
I mean, I am expecting a full-fledged deep throat of someone's cock. We're going to see it. And then, you know, TBS is going to suspend him for blowing someone on the air.
We need Tony Khan sitting on a couch with six dudes standing around him, you know.
I mean.
Six wrestlers, yeah.
Listen, because someone said to me, oh, Kev, if it was WWE and Vince gave it a warm embrace to someone, you'd be like, that's so nice. No, I've seen Vince in the back. You guys have seen clips, too, when Drew McIntyre won the title, gave him a big hug. And when Roman, when he saw, you know, put his hand on Roman's head, he's telling him, I believed in you and stuff. Yes, because I think those moments are more genuine, where Tony Khan is like over-propping guys who, let's be honest, were never the marquee guys. It wasn't like they lost Cody. That was a major blow. WWE is yet to lose and won't, I don't think, lose any of these current guys to AEW. They're going to get the also-rans, the mid-card guys, the guys who were not doing much here anyway.
Do you think?
So, and Tony Khan's making like, Tony Khan's hug of him was the way you would hug, honestly, if, say, Roman Reigns came over. I mean, like, oh my God, we got him. Like, Claudio's a good hand.
Do you think he's hugging all of these employees? Do you think he's hugging all of these wrestlers as a way to kind of make Cody Rhodes jealous?
I think there might be a little dig at Cody Rhodes. Yeah. Again, the most successful... No, you guys can say Moxley. I'm sorry. I think Cody's, come over to the WWE is much bigger than Moxley going to AEW. Cody has been I just think Cody's a bigger star than Moxley. He's treated like a bigger star.
To this day, the Moxley biggest star that AEW acquired even wasn't CM Punk or Bryan Danielson. I'd have to say the biggest star that AEW acquired was Chris Jericho. And Chris still Jericho, remains correct, so to correct. This day.
Chris Jericho, who's looking good these days. And I still think that Chris is looking good because he knows he's coming back to Daddy Vince very
Daddy soon. Vince, all right.
I think he's definitely coming back. But I'm not saying, because people like, you don't think Tony Khan's embrace of this wrestler is genuine, think it's for the cameras. No, I think it's genuine, but I think his mindset is not what we think it is. I think it's... But him making like, we got Claudio Castagnoli, like it's almost like we got Babe Ruth. It's like, you know, if you're on the baseball team, it's like, dude, you know damn well that he's not going to be that guy for you, because guess what? He's still not a good promo guy. He's also, how old is he, guys? How old is Claudio now, guys? 42? 43?
I will say, dude, I don't know if you saw, you know, even snippets of the match. Claudio got bigger when he went to AEW, a little bit, not a lot, but you could tell that he bulked up a little bit. His shoulders and his chest look a lot better. Like Claudio looked like he was training extra hard to make his debut in AEW, which is a good thing. And that's something you expect from people like Claudio. That's something you expect from people like Danielson. You expect that older class of ROH guy to be the ones that are going to try harder when they go to another promotion, as opposed to letting themselves fall apart like Keith Lee. So, you know.
Right. No, he's 41 or 43. Yeah. People are getting the things wrong, but still he's not past his prime. He's on the tail end of it. Cause you can argue, hey, AJ Styles, 43, 44. I get that, guys, but you got to go. AEW was not supposed to be this. They were not supposed to be the land of the middle-aged man. They were supposed to be this, you know, the Wardlows, the Jungle Boys, the stuff. And yes, they're coming along, these guys, and they need time. But in the meantime, I don't think Claudio's the guy to put. He's a great hand. He's a great addition to the roster. And part of that Blackpool Fight Club, what are they called again? Blackpool?
Yeah, Combat Club.
Combat Club. Great addition to it. And obviously, he's got history at Regal. Him, Moxley, and was it Daniel Bryan together? I think, that's all marquee names from the WWE. But again, it's a bunch of ex-WWE guys. They really got to build from within and stop waiting for these other guys to come over. And honestly, I don't see, by the way, I don't see anybody else migrating from current WWE roster, anybody else. I think that's their last get for quite a while, is Claudio. Be.
Well, with that said, much love to everybody. Thank you very much, Kevin, for joining the show. Make sure to check out Castle and Chicky Podcast Adventures, which dropped earlier today. And then, of course, on Thursday, we have Wrestling Soup Regular. And then, of course, check out the RCWR show with Lee Sanders. Check out our boys over at the Alleged Wrestling Podcast. We have some new shows coming on board the network as well. A couple of horror podcasts, perhaps. And some other friends out there. Make sure to subscribe and donate to the Patreon. And, you know, much love to everybody. And hope you guys enjoy the show.
Yes, thanks, guys.
Peace, everyone.
Wrestling Soup.
Hey.
Would like to thank you.
Thank you.
For listening to tonight's show.
That's right.
But to those of you that hate us, we know who.
Yeah, we know you.
There's one thing you can do. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
Go
that's
fuck yourself.
Screw you.
Screw you.